is Going to Town with...
Believe It or Not.
Butlers and neighborhood stores who serve you Royal Crown present Bob Ripley with more of his amazing Believe It or Nots, V.A. Ralph and his orchestra, and lovely Linda Lee. And here's Ted Jewett, a sensible fellow with a good sense of taste.
Believe it or not, Bud, anybody can taste the difference in Royal Crown. Here's a cola drink that comes out first in taste tests 9 times out of 10. We've tested it in small towns and big cities. We've tested it against other leading cola drinks. We've tested it from coast to coast. And in 9 tests out of 10, the vote goes to Royal Crown for better flavor. So, folks, if you want to enjoy a sparkling, tangy beverage, a thirst quencher with a real mellow flavor, ask for the cola that thousands have voted tops in taste. Royal Crown.
And here is that ranking, radioactive, riddle-retrieving reporter regnant of rare, ripping, rapturous, ringing, renascent, redoubtable, rational, revolutionary realities. Believe it or not, Bob Ripley.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the program tonight. And I'm very happy to announce that I have here on the stage beside me a very good friend. You've heard him on the broadcast I presented from Carlsbad Cavern some weeks ago. He's none other than His Excellency, John Miles, Governor of New Mexico.
Thank you, Bob. Glad to be here.
And now to start things going, take it away, B.A. Ralph. This is it.
Remember me?
Oh, why, certainly I do. Ladies and gentlemen, here is lovely Linda Lee herself again, fully recovered from her illness and back again in all her glory.
Thank you. Bob Ripley, while I was away, I listened to every program that you broadcast, and believe me, they were swell. The one that gave me the biggest thrill was the broadcast from the Carlsbad Cavern.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the programs, Linda. And that trip to the Carlsbad Caverns was exciting in more ways than one. On my trip across the country, I stopped at many places and collected many, believe it or not. The one that I consider the best, I found in the famous Show Me State of Missouri on the campus of the Missouri Valley College in Marshall. And I'd like to sketch it for you right now.
The time, August 1857. The place, the state penitentiary in Jefferson City. As our scene opens, the newly elected governor of Missouri, Robert Stewart, has been making a tour of inspection through the prison. As a new squad of prisoners marches in, the governor speaks to Warden Hughes.
So this is the last squad of prisoners for us to examine, eh, Warden?
Yes, Governor. Mm-hmm. They all have the same story. They all say they are innocent because they know you can give them a pardon.
Well, as chief executive of the state and as a member of the prison board, I consider it my duty to know all I can about these fellows. Now, let's see. Let's start over here. Say, you, Come over here.
Oh, me?
Yes, you. What's your name?
I'm Billy Langton, sir.
Billy Langton, eh? What are you in here for?
I ain't done nothing, Governor. I'm innocent, I am.
Mm-hmm. He's a notorious forger, Governor.
Well, that's too bad. Innocent, eh? Say, you, what's your name?
Johnny Reardon, sir. They arrested me for arson. But I was only trying to put out the fire.
Governor, you might be interested to know that Reardon here tried to put out 17 other fires before we caught him.
Yeah, another innocent man, eh? 17 fires. Next, you there. What's your name?
My name is Jess Waldron, sir. And, Your Honor, if ever there was a gross and flagrant miscarriage of justice, it is I who stands before you. A burning example of man's inhumanity to man.
What are you innocent of, Jess?
The minions of the law maintain that I was apprehended in the act of robbing a store. To wit, a clothing store in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. But Your Honor can see that I am of studious mien.
The police caught him red-handed.
Very inconsiderate of them to interrupt his scholarly pursuits. Well, this is very interesting. Let's talk to one more. That old fellow standing over there. Hey, you.
Yes, sir?
What's your name?
Robert Marcy, sir.
What are you doing with prison stripes on your clothes?
To tell you the truth, sir, I think I'm guilty.
Guilty of what?
I think I killed a boy.
What do you mean, you think?
It is like this, Governor.
Yes?
I used to be first mate on a showboat on the Missouri River that flows outside the walls of this very prison.
A showboat, huh?
Yes, sir. And we had a cabin boy. And a more ornery rascal never breathed. There's only one word to describe him. A young devil incarnate.
And was that the boy you killed?
Yes, sir. But I really didn't mean to kill him.
Oh, you didn't?
No, sir. I had to punish him several times. But when he emptied a pot of glue in my hat, I couldn't stand it any longer. One night I lost my temper and I kicked him.
And that killed him?
No, sir. But he went overboard from that kick and disappeared in the Missouri River. They never found him.
Hmm.
I was charged with manslaughter and here I am, in for life.
Well, you know what I think, Warden? I think it's an outrage that such a rascal as this, an admittedly guilty man, should be allowed to stay here and corrupt the morals of all these innocent prisoners.
I see what you mean, Governor.
Now, Warden, I want you to go to your office and make out a complete pardon for this man, Robert Marcy.
What do you mean, Governor? You're not going to pardon this man?
I want this man released at once. Make out the pardon.
Yes, sir.
Robert Marcy, you're in my custody until I hand you that pardon. Warden, Marcy and I are going up at the prison wall alongside the river. They'll meet us up there with the pardon. Come along, Marcy. Let's go up on the prison wall.
Yes.
Hey, Marcy. Isn't it nice up here on the wall?
Yes, sir.
There's your Missouri River. Isn't 10 feet below us. The same river you kicked that boy into. I should think the prisoners could escape easily from here and just jump into the river and swim away.
Well, they can't, Governor. You see those boats?
Yeah.
The guards in them. If a prisoner did escape, they'd have him out of the water in a second.
Oh. Well, here's our warden now. You got the pardon with you, Warden?
Yes, Governor.
Mm-hmm.
It's ready for your signature. Here's pen and ink for you.
Well, thanks. here. Now, Robert Marcy, here's your pardon. You're a free man.
You're not fooling. I can go. I'm really free.
Wait a minute. Before you go, there's a little detail that I want to attend to. Turn around and face the river.
Yes, sir, but...
Robert Marcy, I have a little account to settle with you. I wish to return a kick I received 19 years ago. You know, Warden, I owed Marcy that kick. You see, I'm the rascal who put glue in his hat. That same cabin boy he kicked into the river 19 years ago.
I wonder who got the greatest kick out of that, the prisoner or the governor of Missouri. While on a tour of inspection in the state penitentiary of Missouri, Governor Stewart spoke to a convict who pleaded guilty to having caused the death of a boy by kicking him off a showboat into the Missouri River. The governor immediately pardoned the convict and then, with a fine sense of justice, evened up the score by kicking the pardoned man into the Missouri River from the prison walls. For that governor was none other than the cabin boy who was kicked off that showboat 19 years before. Believe it or not. Now for the Believe It or Not musical department. B.A., what have you got for us tonight?
Well, Bob, 2 weeks ago we played some really serious music, and from all the requests I've received, I think that the country needs now more serious music.
So do I.
So, with your permission, I'll repeat Three Little Fishes.
Okay, B.A. Film.
That jaunty, jangling juggler of jaw-breaking jargon, Believe It or Not, Ted Jewett.
Say, Ted, pardon me for laughing, but I'm glad you've got to live up to one of those introductions for a change.
Well, this time I can, Bob, because we've got a Believe It or Not about Royal Crown.
Well, I'd like to have someone tell me a Believe It or Not.
All right, we will. Bud, will you open one of those ice-cold bottles of Royal Crown and hand it to Bob Ripley?
Sure. There you are, Bob.
Now, Bob, will you please pour it?
All right.
We want our listeners to know that every bottle of Royal Crown holds not one, but two big glasses full to the brim.
All right, Ted, here's the first one. And there's the second. You see, two big glasses full to the brim, believe it or not.
Thank you, Bob Ripley. And one thing more, folks. We want you to hear its lively sparkle. Hear it? There are no tricks about Royal Crown. It wins friends on sparkle and flavor. If you'll just try it, we know you'll like it.
Because of men's lives can be so interwoven with one another that they form a pattern that only divinity can weave, I constantly marvel at the startling examples that are brought to my attention. As a case in point, let me sketch for you this unusual incident. The time, June the 29th, 1934, the place, El Paso, Texas. As our scene opens, Alfred Smith is driving home with a friend.
Ah, it's getting late.
Yeah.
Ought to be home pretty soon now, Al.
Yep. Pretty hot tonight.
Uh-huh.
Be glad to get home and cool off a bit.
Hey, look at this truck coming past us.
Look at that boy go.
Here comes a cop chasing him.
Look, the truck is trying to make a left turn. The cop can't stop.
He'll crash right into him. Holy jumping.
Come on, Joe. We gotta help the cop. He's hurt.
Come on, let's go.
Come on now. Yeah, come on. Help me pull this motorcycle off.
All right.
Gosh. Gosh, his leg's almost cut off.
Gee, he's hurt bad, all right.
Oh, my leg.
No, it's going to be all right, buddy. Just lie quiet. Don't move.
Gee, Al, he's bleeding awful from his knee.
Yeah, we got to do something quick. Give me his necktie.
His necktie? What for?
To make a tourniquet.
Oh.
Here, tie it around his leg.
Okay.
No, above the knee.
Right.
Yeah, that's it, that's it. Now tight.
Yeah.
Tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. See, it's stopping already.
Alfred Smith did tie a tourniquet around that injured policeman's leg. Later, doctors told that policeman that he owed his life to the quick thinking and the skill of Alfred Smith. Within 6 months after that accident, the injured man was back on the job of patrolling the highways. His name was Alan Falby of the El Paso County Police. 5 years passed by. The time is now December the 12th, 1938, just 6 months ago. As our next scene opens, Captain Alan Falby is patrolling a highway just outside of El Paso, and suddenly, an order comes through on his radio receiver.
Calling motorcycle 59. Calling motorcycle 59. Captain Falby. Captain Falby. Investigate serious motor accident. U.S. Highway 80, 3 miles east of Escanity Station. Calling motorcycle 59. Captain Falby. Captain...
What happened?
Officer, this car here crashed into a cottonwood tree. I live across the road and ran over here when I heard it.
Yeah?
There's a man in the back seat. He's hurt badly. His leg, I think.
Okay, you can help me.
Certainly, officer. Anything I can do.
Come on.
He's very badly hurt. I hope we can help him.
Oh. That's his right leg, eh? Oh. Say, he's in bad shape. He severed the artery. Quick, hand me those bandages and get me a piece of wood.
All right.
We've got to make a tourniquet.
Captain Falbe's quick thinking and skillful first aid treatment in applying a tourniquet around that injured man's leg saved his life. After that tragic accident, that man went to the hospital and remained there 3 months. We are very happy to say he has recovered sufficiently to come here tonight, all the way from El Paso, Texas, to tell you the true story of that accident. His name is Alfred Smith. I've also brought the hero of that accident, Police Captain Alan Falby.
Good evening, Captain Ripley, Mr. Ripley.
Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Smith, I'm sorry you are still on crutches, but after that terrible accident, you are a very lucky man to even be here tonight.
Indeed, I am. When I got to the hospital, the doctors told me that if I hadn't had that tourniquet around my leg, I would have bled to death in 10 minutes. Alive to Captain Falby.
Captain Falby, you are certainly to be congratulated.
Well, Mr. Ripley, I wouldn't have been able to save Alfred Smith's life last December if he hadn't saved mine 5 years before.
Won't you please explain, Captain Falby?
You see, Alfred Smith was the man who put the tourniquet around my leg and saved my life when my motorcycle hit that truck. After all, one good tourniquet deserves another.
Well, and there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. 5 years ago, Captain Falby was hurt in an accident. Alfred Smith, a passing motorist, saved the captain's life by applying a tourniquet to his leg. Just last December, Alfred Smith himself was hurt, and Captain Falby saved Smith's life by applying a tourniquet to his leg, thus repaying the debt of a life with a life, believe it or not. Ladies and gentlemen, we are doubly fortunate in having with us tonight Captain Falby, a victim and a hero of the Believe It or Not I have just presented. Captain Falby has devoted his life to the important business of accident prevention and safer traffic conditions. I've been talking with Captain Falby about his work, and it interested me so much that I looked up the facts concerning traffic accidents, and I was absolutely astounded. All of us remember the World War as the most appalling calamity of all time, with 50,000 American soldiers killed. Yet it is hard to realize that since the World War, more than 500,000 lives have been lost in the United States from traffic accidents alone. I found also that there are no two states in the United States that have the same traffic laws. There are more than 3,219 different traffic laws and regulations. How anyone can be expected to know so many rules and regulations is beyond me. Why, even the system for traffic lights is a maze of confusion. And Captain Falby, as a man who has devoted his life to promoting safety, there is one question I would like to ask you. What one thing can we do to reduce the staggering toll of automobile accidents and fatalities?
Mr. Ripley, I believe there's one thing that will do more to reduce automobile accidents than any other. Uniform traffic regulations from coast to coast.
Captain Falby, we have Governor Miles of New Mexico in the studio as our distinguished guest, and I would like an opinion from him. Governor Miles, what do you think about the idea of uniform traffic regulations from coast to coast?
Bob, I think that this is a sound suggestion for the remedying of the many traffic accidents that I have yet heard. In fact, when I took office in New Mexico as governor, I appointed an expert, a safety and traffic engineer, to work out just such an idea.
Governor Miles, I think we should take action right now on this idea. Ladies and gentlemen, I appeal to every man, woman, and child listening to this program to do something about this. Please, each and every one of you, write immediately to the governor of your state and insist that all traffic laws from coast to coast be made the same. In this way, we can here and now do a great work in reducing these appalling casualties. So write to your governor right now.
Bob Ripley, speaking as the governor of New Mexico, I am sure that every governor in the United States will give his wholehearted endorsement and cooperation to this idea. And, Bob, you deserve great credit for the most forward step yet taken in accident prevention and life saving.
Thank you, Governor Miles. And I'm sure that the American people now know that they alone can reduce the toll of almost 40,000 lives lost every year in traffic accidents. So everyone, write to your governor, and let's all make the United States united for safety. Linda, for you it's been a long time between songs, and this is a moment we are happy to welcome.
Thanks, Bob. Here's a typical, topical, timely tune, and it's called Ain't You Coming Out.
Okay, Linda, and come out swinging.
Each night at 8, under her window he'd wait. He would look up and shout, ain't you coming out, ain't you coming out, ain't you coming out, ain't you coming out. He never played music for his serenade. He'd just stand there and shout, ain't you coming out, ain't you coming out, ain't you coming out. He couldn't strum a guitar, a banjo or violin. He couldn't sing tra-la-la. He couldn't beat on a drum. He'd just come there and shout, ain't you coming out, ain't you coming out. Hark to the tale of a troubadour, not the ordinary kind that we all know. Love songs to him were an awful bore. This one is a different kind of Romeo. never brought her a friend. Candy or fruit or perfume, he was too lovesick to bring. Peanuts or popcorn or gum, he just shunned. Ain't you coming out?
Linda, here's news from your part of the country.
What's that, Ted?
In Birmingham, Alabama, Royal Crown ran a taste test against leading competition. What was the result?
Birmingham, Alabama, Royal Crown wins by more than 2-1.
Another test in St. Louis, Missouri. Here again, Royal Crown was chosen the taste favorite.
By a margin of more than twice as many votes as two leading competitors combined.
You can't beat flavor. Taste wins every time. Royal Crown has pep and sparkle. It has the goodness that comes from real quality. That's why folks voted the taste winner. That's why Royal Crown makes new friends strictly on its own merit. Try Royal Crown. Sample its cool, refreshing flavor. Then see if you ever go back to any other cola drink again. This holiday weekend, relax and enjoy Royal Crown. Get the handy home carton that holds 6 bottles and costs only a quarter. 12 big, bubbling glasses for your enjoyment.
And remember, the makers of Royal Crown, Knee-High Corporation, Columbus, Georgia, are also makers of the famous Knee-High and Party Pack beverages.
Bob, I feel fit as a fiddle and ready for problem time again. What have you got to tax my wits?
Oh, I have a very nice one for you, Linda. Tell me, in what European country is every official sworn in on a herring?
Bob, am I herring correctly?
Uh-oh, I guess I asked for that one, all right.
Well, it sounds fishy to me, but I'll go into a huddle with my three little fishes and see if they know the answer.
And if the three little fishes don't come through for you, I'll give you the answer next Friday night myself, Linda. On the 4th of July, 163 years ago, next Tuesday, the Continental Congress, sitting in Philadelphia, adopted one of the greatest documents of all time, the Declaration of Independence. That meeting of the Continental Congress began with a prayer pronounced by Dr. Jacob Duché, rector of the Old Christ Church. And I'd like to repeat his prayer to you now, because its contents should be eternally in our hearts. He said, O Lord, we beseech thee, look down in mercy upon these United States. Take them under thy sympathetic care and cause order, harmony, and peace to prevail and flourish among thy people.
Next week, the bottlers and neighborhood stores who serve you Royal Crown will again present Bob Ripley with more of his amazing Believe It or Nots, with V.A. Ralph and his orchestra, and lovely Linda Lee. This is Bud Collier wishing you good night. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.